Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is managing editor James Kleiman to talk about the commission lawsuits, the latest news, and the misconceptions we're seeing in the mainstream media. James, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
So good to have you on to talk about commission lawsuits. You and your newsroom have been all over this. You've been on top of it, and we need that more than ever because we have a lot of misconceptions out there on the commission lawsuits in the mainstream media, especially. I don't like to bag on media. We're a media company, but it does show when they don't really understand housing.
It's super disappointing, and especially when the president of the United States, regardless of whether you like his politics or support him or not, straight up says on national television a complete, utter fiction about how people buy and sell real estate and how they compensate the folks in the industry. And so it's really disappointing when you hear something like that. And you don't also don't hear a mea culpa very often from people in the Oval Office. So yeah, if the president can't get it right, I think it's hard to be consistent as an industry in letting people know, hey, this is how it was. Commissions were always negotiable. You could have it as low as a dollar. It's not, and also the fact that in most cases, it doesn't mean that people are suddenly going to save $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, or that the price of the home is suddenly going to be a lot more, I think, attainable for various budgets. So it's a lot of misinformation, and I know the industry is eager to correct it, but it's hard to go up against the power of the voice of the president or big media, right?
Well, that's why we're here, right? So we are giving voice to the people in the industry. And one of the things to note is that many people in our industry feel like this actually disadvantages the buyers quite a bit. I mean, if they have to come up with it, it's not like everyone's going to decide now, oh, okay, I'll just lower the cost of my home by that much. I don't see that happening, as you said. And also, we know that people are having a real struggle coming up with the down payment already. So if at the closing table they have to also pay the buyer's agent, it's just most people in our industry do not think that this is going to end up better for the buyers at all.
Yeah, I know very few people who think that the buyers are going to gain an advantage because of the prospect of the settlement agreements becoming law and practice. Certainly, we haven't even gotten into the potential impact this has on VA buyers and on FHA, government loan buyers, because they have caps on what they're able to put in for regarding concessions. And in the case of the VA, they cannot pay the agent. They're not able to. It's part of the language of the loan programs, right? So there's certainly a segment of buyers who are going to be more acutely affected if this does become the law in mid-July, as is expected. But yeah, I mean, it's a complicated issue. There are a lot of stakeholders on different sides, and we are really working diligently to try to cover every angle. So, how does a seller have a conversation with a client who reads a New York Times or Wall Street Journal article and says, you no longer have to pay the buyer's agent? And they say, well, I'm in a hot market, or I just don't want to. Maybe I'm stubborn. And now that buyer is going to have to come up with it out of pocket, right? It's going to limit your pool of buyers, most likely. There are a lot of questions about how it might be wrapped into financing, right? A lot of people in the mortgage industry don't want the buyer to be able to wrap, the commissions or closing costs into the financing. So yeah, it's a complicated issue, and people at different desks have different expectations and hopes for how it ultimately ends up practically being, being decided. But there's no, the mortgage industry is large, and there are a lot of different stakeholders that have different models. Some benefit more from a model like this. or whatever the practice ends up being in the future. And just in the case of the real estate brokerages as well, you know, there are some that have agents who are better equipped to deal with this than other brokerages. And so, you know, these are not, you know, uniform entities that all have the same perspective here. But I think the prevailing opinion that I often hear is that buyers are going to be disadvantaged going forward.
I also, you know, we hear from both realtors and those that, you know, in different leadership positions there, as well as LOs and mortgage leaders. And it's interesting to me that on the one side, the real estate folks feel like, you know, the mortgage lenders are going to be in a, you know, at a disadvantage from a regulatory standpoint if they're going to try to figure this out on their end. And the mortgage people are like, but if at the same time, and they recognize that, they're like, do the realtors understand that, like, once you start, you know, talking about commissions and taking payment directly from consumers, that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau might all of a sudden be like, I mean, the mortgage industry is very well acquainted with regulation. And the real estate industry certainly has some regulation, but not at the same level, I would say, as, you know, they have to worry about RESPA. They have to worry about a couple
of things. It's not even close.
It's not even close. So it's interesting to me that both sides are like, oh, regulatory, you know, issues are going to come bite people when they're not even thinking about it. And I'm like, it definitely is. I'm just, it's interesting that both sides see the other as the one that are going to have to figure it out.
Mortgage is particularly interesting because I have spoken to quite a few people, executives at mostly smaller and mid-sized lenders who are really interested in examining or exploring what they might be able to do if, let's say, the buyer agent is marginalized or not in part of the equation. Could they have their own salaried staff that are de facto agents? You know, they already have the pre-approval, right? They know the buyer's finances, but then you run into questions about, are they influencing a buyer to get into a deal that they maybe is above their actual price point, right? Then you wonder about just the logistical issues and navigating RESPA. I mean, for the most part, mortgage lenders are a lot more comfortable navigating these issues. But you also know that mortgage lenders are not having a great moment. You know, they lost, however much money last quarter on average per loan. I think it was, like $1,500, maybe more. That's almost two full years of losing money every quarter. And there are a lot of loan officers, a lot of mortgage folks who look at what happened in Dodd-Frank and say, okay, you're capping my pay based on a percentage of a loan. And meanwhile, you know, and you have all these very difficult rules to navigate around to get us more money on these loans. And then on the other side, some guy shows up, opens a door, and they get 3%, you know? So like there are definitely a lot of LOs and executives in mortgage who feel like they've been penalized very heavily and the agents have been able to run up these numbers and basically just gain on the equity of their clients. You know, their job hasn't meaningfully gotten more difficult or easier. It's the same job. It's just that house that they maybe, you know, worked on the sell side 10 years ago, and now they work on the buy side, it appreciated 150%. They haven't done 150% more work, right? And the lenders very much need revenue right now. So many of them are looking for an exit or looking for another revenue stream because they're in pretty difficult positions right now. So I don't know how many of them are really going to do it. There are a lot of LOs out there who say, you know what, I don't want to also be a real estate agent. It's hard enough being a good LO. These are very different jobs, right? The skill sets are totally different. Yes, it's a sales job, but they're really, really different in nature and, you know, knowing the programs versus knowing how, you know, buyers and sellers transact in a specific neighborhood or, you know, how certain buyers are interested in a school district versus, you know, like it's just not the same as figuring out a mortgage product, the financing of it. And so I know there are a lot of LOs who don't want to go down that route, who think dual agency in particular is a really, I think, a complicated, not a space they want to go into, right? They just don't want to do it. And more than anything, look at who they're getting their leads from, right? They're going to be competing with the people that they're getting their leads from. They would have to be generating a lot of business themselves or getting leads from maybe their lender or from other sources and work as both the LO and the agent on the deal to get an extra, what, 1%, you know, 2% maybe at most, and then alienate all of their business partners at the same time and not get referral business. Like, I don't really see that happening for retail, distributed retail, LOs, and especially brokers, because for the most part, these are their best referral sources. And, you know, you don't punch your best friend in the nose and then say, hey, man, like, can you give me 20 bucks the next day, right?
Huge point. Huge point. Also, you know, when you think about just the different, like there are only 24 hours in a day. How much do you want to work? Like, if you're a real estate agent, you are on call in a way that mortgage loan officers are also on call. I mean, they definitely do, but not like, you know, oh, okay, I can only see this house on, not like agents. And so it's like, how would you do both of those jobs? I mean, I guess you would have people in your office that, you know, you'd sublet or whatever. But I mean, if you're actually a loan officer and you're thinking, oh, I'm actually also going to be do the work of both of those, it just seems really fraught with peril.
I don't see it happening. I do think we could see new models emerge that are a little bit more like Redfin, right? I think the Redfin model has maybe not always been the most profitable for a number of reasons, but it is a pretty steady model. And I do think that it's been battle tested. And so I could see a situation where you have more of a flat fee kind of brokerage get involved and say, you know, we're going to offer these services to buyers, and or maybe it's hourly, right? I mean, certainly that's a model that works for a heck of a lot of other professions. And if you've already got an agreement with your buyer that says, I'm going to pay you, you know, there's a lot more certainty than, okay, I'm going to work with this client and maybe they never buy the house and I wasted 60 man hours for nothing, right? And stepped over good business to pick up this client and they ended up not getting anything out of it. So yeah, I think there are some advantages, but not a whole lot of them. I just don't see most retail or broker shops and mortgage being able to make good use of this consistently and not alienate their partners and find a model in which their LOs are, one, both good agents and good LOs and have the time to do it. Maybe they could find some sort of a hybrid where you have like LOAs, right? Loan officer assistants, or someone who has maybe a bit more administrative know-how who could also get licensed as a real estate agent and would be able to provide some value. But, you know, you run into a lot of legal questions there. Does now the mortgage lender take on a lot more liability? Is their insurance company going to sign off on that? You know, it's a lot of kettles of fish, right? There's a lot of fish in general if you really want to get into that. So I don't see it. I could definitely see new models emerge that are a little bit more traditional, flat fee, hourly. Maybe a real estate attorney's office wants to, you know, offer something locally, and you know, there will be something. The model that we have right now doesn't work. We're going to see a big washout of agents anyway, and you know, the question is what will replace it, how quickly, and how much money ends up coming out of the commissions. And that's still very much TBD.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We are all over it. Brooklee Hahn, Flavia Furlan Nunez, yourself, Tracy Velt, all these people on our staff are really working on it. I will let listeners know we have a commission lawsuits page. It's a homepage that a landing page. It's super helpful. It has all the latest news. It also has a really interesting timeline. So if you're trying to get caught up or you're thinking, what is the latest that had happened, which, you know, we had things happen on Friday. So, you should definitely check that out. Also, James and I are both, doing different, sessions at the gathering on this topic. We've been on prep calls with, you know, brokerage leaders, mortgage leaders that we're going to talk to about this topic, because it is definitely something everyone's trying to figure out.
Yeah, I just got off one, which was why I was a couple minutes late to this podcast. And having been in the discussion, the prep call, I think one of the major takeaways from these brokerage leaders is there's a lack of leadership in the real estate brokerage space. And you can very clearly see it if you even look on Facebook or in the comments section of some of these mainstream articles. You'll see comments from real estate agents themselves that don't know what they're talking about, that don't even understand what happened. There are so many misconceptions and misinformation that is out there. And I think it underscores one of the bigger problems here is that for the professional agent and broker, they've been studying this, they've been planning for this, they've already been doing buyer side agreements with clients that are 4 to 6 months, exclusive, non-exclusive. They've been, you know, having their agents have scripts to handle various scenarios. They know what to say when a sell side client says, I don't want to pay the buyer agent, period, no matter what, you know, how to think about this. But the vast majority of agents, I'm sorry to say, numerically speaking, don't know because they're part-time or they don't have the training or they haven't had a mentor. They're just kind of flailing and you know, reading little things here and there. And I think it's natural that people who are not well informed and you know, don't do as many deals, don't have as much tangible experience, that they're not going to handle it well. And so to me, that says we should have a 40% decline in the number of agents in this country. There are too many agents, full stop. And if you're not providing value, no matter what side of the deal you're on, I think your days are numbered. And, you know, I work in journalism, like certainly I've seen, you know, maybe a comparable side of that, and which is not to say that, you know, a lot of the journalists who do good work are not struggling or underemployed or unemployed because they're not good. But if you can't articulate your value, if you can't figure out how to get interesting, good, solid information and provide a good service to people, people aren't going to listen to you. They're not going to look you up. They're not going to find you. They're not going to seek you when they need to seek you. And that means you don't have a lot of flexibility or options. And where do you go? And I'm sad to say, but there are probably a million agents who are in that category.
It's sobering. It's crazy. You know, one of the things that you guys have written about in the newsroom is that there is a model for some of this, you know, for at least the buyer representation agreements, and that's Washington State. So they've had this as a law for a while. And so everyone there is already used to doing this. And so they could provide a model for other people who are like, okay, how do we do this? And it's some of the things that you talked about, like you can sign it for 30 or 60 or 90 days, you can sign exclusive or non-exclusive. So maybe talk a little bit about what that article gives some advice on.
Yeah. So there are a couple big MLSs out there that are not realtor affiliated. So the one of the biggest is in my backyard here in New York. It's called REBNY, the Real Estate Board of New York. They're not affiliated with the NAR. And one of the other really big ones is up in Washington State. It's called Northwest MLS. And so they've been really trying to stay ahead of a lot of these class action lawsuits. And one thing that they put into place, I want to say it was last year, if not late last year, very early this year, they basically said, look, a buyer representation agreement is mandatory. And essentially what it means is they determine what the exact scope of the services provided by the agent are, and they also lay out what the compensation is going to be. And it's an agreement, right? It's a negotiation, like anything should be in real estate. And so I don't think that they're going to be impacted as greatly as some of the other agents and brokers out there that are, you know, still playing under the NAR rules, which haven't fully come into effect yet. And so I think it's a pretty easy way to also begin your education with the buyer to explain to them, okay, what are the mechanics of the transaction? How does real estate function? What does representation look like? And what are we doing going forward? How do we reach an agreement? What are you comfortable with? Is it, say, 4-month contract that says, I'm going to be your buyer agent, you're going to pay me, maybe it's a flat fee, maybe it's an hourly, maybe it's a percentage of whatever you know, the sale price ends up being, but the fact that you already have this agreement in place is, I think, a really important and significant step forward. And we've done these surveys through Real Trends for quite some time. We know that a lot of these agents, the professional agents, not, you know, the people who do this part-time, who really aren't professionals in a true sense. But the real professionals, they have been doing this because they know that you have to, and that this is the future. And if you don't have that locked up, you can also be working for a long time and not get anything out of it. So it's I think it's a really, really key step forward. And you can have them be exclusive relationships or non-exclusive. And that's especially helpful if you're trying to get new clients, right? Because if you get that lead and they barely know you, it's how do you provide value? How do you prove to them in initial conversation, I'm the guy who knows my stuff. I'm the one to get you the best house at the best price. We're going to negotiate, you know, so that you, your two kids, your husband, your dog, you know, choose the right neighborhood that works perfectly for you. And not, I'm not just there to open doors and say, yeah, I don't know. Do you like it? Right? Like, that's the step toward that. And look, it's not going to happen in every single case. But I do think having this as a requirement is really key.
I think in that article, it talks about this sort of like dating, right? Like you talked about exclusive, yeah, non-exclusive, because you meet somebody and it's like, okay, well, at what point in the relationship, I think their law only requires it like before they sign the contract on the house. So that gives you a lot of, you know, different room. But as you said, I mean, agents might want to be like, let's do this before I start showing you houses. But at the same time, like, it can be non-exclusive so that maybe you know, go with another agent until you decide, yeah, this is the right fit. So it is a quickly evolving thing, and we'll see how that, what that looks like in Washington, what best practices maybe come out. Looks like they started that, they had to start doing that on January 1st of this year. So it's pretty new, but I bet they already have some learnings there, and we'll see, like, you know, this is how agents have adjusted.
Yeah. And look, they, up in Washington, they've been non-realtor, non-NAR affiliated for quite some time. And so they've always been able to do it a little bit differently. They've changed a lot of their rules and practices regarding commission. And, you know, like I said earlier, these buyer agreements well ahead of any NAR mandates. And for all the people out there who are reading stories that say commissions are going to fall from, you know, $100 billion a year, they're going to fall by 30 to 50 billion per year. Maybe that will happen at some point in time. No one really knows how all of this is going to, you know, ultimately work out. But in Washington, people are still paying buyer agent commissions in like 97% of cases or more. And they're almost always coming from the sell side. You know, yes, they're going to be, we're going to see changes in contracts. We're going to see things come out in seller concessions. We're going to see them written in different areas. If the MLS changes go into effect in July through the NAR settlement, we won't see them in the actual MLS listing line, right? But they will be elsewhere. Maybe they'll be on someone's personal website. Maybe they'll be on social media. Maybe, just maybe, I don't know. I've heard that this happens in the old world. People just call each other and say, hey, what is your seller willing to pay the buyer agent? And then you go from there, right? Like, we're not like radically changing some. We are changing some things, and I think in important ways, but it's not like buyers and sellers won't still be able to transact just as easily as they were before. And I think for the most part, sellers understand that buyers' agents are still bringing value because they're bringing the client that has the money and the financing. They've been vetted by their mortgage company, or they're a cash buyer, and they understand the process a little bit better, probably better educated now because they also had to sign an agreement with their agent, right? And so, yes, is there more leverage on the sell side? Probably. I think so. I think that's fair to say. But they also want to work with professionals, right? They don't want to work with some random dude who comes up and says, oh, I don't need a buyer's agent. I don't need representation. It's just, they want certainty, right? They want to get paid. They only get paid when the deal closes.
I can tell you, as someone who recently sold a house, that the last thing I want is random dudes who have no other, you know, I don't know who they are. I mean, one of the things about letting people into your home, if you still live there, and letting them walk around, is they have an agent. That agent is responsible for them. That agent can be held accountable for what's going on. They've already vetted that, yes, this person can actually afford the house. The last thing I'm going to do is just let a random person wander through, potentially steal medications or all the horror stories you hear about people who do this. I mean, like it's, there's so much there. As a seller, I would definitely be like, I want to work with professionals. I will pay this money, right? I've done it in the past. I would do it in the future because it's just, I can't imagine doing it the other way.
Yeah. And now the real question though, is it worth 3% or 2.5%? And so that's always been really the core. I mean, from the DOJ's perspective, it's been that the sell side has essentially set the commission in advance. And I, personally speaking, don't mind that that rule is being dislocated and that buyers are going to be responsible for their own representation. I think that's a reasonable, rule change. But we want to professional. We have this great system with the MLSs that other countries do not have. And it's a really efficient marketplace. Is it efficient enough and valuable enough, having said all that I've said about how many agents are not really good, they're not really professional, should the standard be 2.5% to 3% on the buy side? I do think that they will come down. I do think they're going to start falling. I don't think they're going to drop from 2.5% all the way down to like 1% or 1.5%. It's going to be gradual, but I do think there's going to be a lot of pressures on the buy side because a lot of them are not able to articulate the value and people are going to say, the heck did I just spend all that money on? And when their friend or cousin or neighbor says, hey, do you recommend the agent? You know, I'm thinking about buying a house as well or selling this one and buying. They're going to say, yeah, well, don't use this one. Like, we overpaid. I could have done that myself. You know, someone else, you should talk to somebody else or do it yourself. Talk to a lawyer. Talk to the listing agent yourself, right? Like, don't do what I did. But again, I think that also represents an opportunity for the good agents who are more advisors, who are more, you know, into providing a full picture and providing advice on the whole process to really get more business than they previously would have had under the old system.
What do we see? What are the things we're waiting on? So we've had a lot of action. What are we still waiting on in these commission lawsuits from a legal perspective?
Quite a bit. So they need to be approved by the judge. That's Judge Stephen Bow in Missouri. I think it's pretty likely that he's going to sign off on it. I don't think that the issues are going to come from him. They're very much, the NAR settlement is very, very similar to the other settlements that had already been done before the trial had concluded. And so I would be shocked if he were to hold it up. There is still the possibility that the DOJ looks at these agreements and says, you know, they have written statements of interest in other cases. We don't like this, this, or this. But the DOJ's big thing, and it really has been for a long time, is they don't want the seller or the seller's agent to be determining the compensation for the buyer's agent, and especially before anything in the process has been done. They also are very, very wary of the idea of steering. And so if the DOJ feels that the settlement agreement with the NAR and really anyone else, so Compass also recently settled for $58 million, just under $58 million, I believe it was. And again, basically the same terms as every other brokerage. But if they don't feel like the terms of these agreements satisfy the DOJ to make sure that agents are not incentivized or positioned now because of these changes to steer clients away from the home, away from listings, they may step in and say, hey, we're going to file a statement of interest. We're going to, essentially try to dissuade the judge from signing off on these. And then they're still probably separately going to go after, you know, all of the same players, through their own legal process. So we don't know exactly what that looks like. Again, I think the DOJ, my reading is the DOJ got a lot of what they wanted, what they've been seeking in these agreements. I would be surprised if the DOJ stepped in and said, this isn't good enough, but I mean, hell, if I knew what the DOJ was doing, I'd get paid a lot more money and we wouldn't be talking today, Sarah.
We would not. I would wish it for you, James. I really would.
I appreciate that. That's kind of you.
Thank you for bringing us up to speed. Really looking forward to what you guys do next. Again, listeners, HousingWire page, commission lawsuit, just put it in. Everything is there. We update that thing all the time because things are happening all the time.
Yeah, every single day we have a story on something that's happening with the real estate commission cases and really the second order and third order effect. So there are so many potential changes to the appraisal industry coming. There are a lot of potential changes, obviously, with mortgage and really very much the VA side of things, the policy side, how much of this can be wrapped into the mortgage going forward. There's a title component as well. So there's just a lot here. And, you know, again, if there are projections out there that commissions could drop from 6% all the way down to 4%, what does that look like in mortgage? What does that look like in real estate? What does that look like for the consumer, both on the sell side and the buy side? You know, is there a new model in brokerage that takes off? We've seen a lot of the big models lately where, you know, these companies are offering virtual offices, brokerage services, everything is in the cloud, and they have 20, 30, 40, 50,000 agents that suddenly join out of nowhere, and their business models and effects, for the most part, like charging fees to agents. Well, if agents aren't really transacting, what do those business models look like going forward, right? So there's so many different things to unpack here. And so we're covering it pretty much every day, with the exception of Sunday, where we're trying to even get stories up on Saturdays as well. So yeah, please check back. And if you ever have any questions or just want to sound off, you can always email me or hit me up on LinkedIn. It's james@hwmedia.com.
James, thank you so much. Appreciate you and the coverage. We'll talk again soon.
Cool. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.